Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith, and hope. Discover more interviews at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Hello, this is Stephen O'Doherty. Now, an inspiring life lived in faith. Mercy nun Sister Angela Mary Doyle, AO, had no idea what lay ahead for her when, in the 1940s, she made the long sea journey to Australia from her home in Ireland. Just 21 years old, she felt the loneliness of her new country. But as a woman of determination, purpose, and faith, she soon found her feet and devoted herself to serving the community. She's been awarded the Australian Catholic University's highest honour, Doctor of the University. That accolade was in recognition of her pioneering work, establishing care for people suffering from HIV/AIDS, and her unwavering commitment, even in retirement, to the mission of the Mater Hospital in Brisbane. Earlier this year, the Taiwanese Minister for Foreign Affairs also presented Sister Angela Mary with the Friend of Foreign Service Medal for her notable commitment to the Taiwanese community in Australia. Though her language skills were rusty, she accepted the award speaking Mandarin. Not bad for a woman who didn't graduate high school. When we caught up with Sister Angela Mary Doyle, we offered her congratulations for a lifetime of service and especially for that honorary doctorate.
Yes, that was a surprise. I suppose most honours are, but this came as a complete surprise. I don't know where it came from, but I'm very grateful for it. It was very good.
Can I take you back to 1947? You arrive in Brisbane from Ireland, and I'm going to ask you about Ireland in a minute and your background, but yes. What was Brisbane like in 1947?
There were very few big buildings. We were shown the Custom House and the City Hall as being significant buildings in Brisbane. I had come from Ireland where I lived in the country and there weren't any high-rise buildings where I was, so, it wasn't that much different. But I thought it was, we came in June and it was, I didn't think it was very cold then,
Yes, I'm sure.
It was winter.
Yes, that's right. And the people that you met and those that you saw, because you came to serve. So what was your initial sense of their needs?
Oh, there was... actually, if you need to know, it took me 5 weeks on a troop ship. The Australian Navy, Air Force, and Army people, troops were returning from the war.
Oh yeah.
And so it wasn't a very deluxe sort of a setup, but it was all we needed. And there were about 10 of us that came together, and we struck some rough times on the boat. We were all sick. So that feeling remains with you. You never want to feel that sort of thing again.
Yes.
But I came out, I thought I'd be a teacher. But then I found out to my horror that I was going to be sent to the martyr.
To your horror?
My horror, yes.
You trained as a teacher, had you?
I did. I had trained as a teacher and I had been teaching for a short time. But they picked five sisters from the schools because they said there were short of sisters at the martyr at the time. And I was one of them, but I was horrified because I thought, if I go to the martyr, I'll see sick people and I'll see maybe dying people and I might even have to look at blood. I thought, wouldn't that be a frightful thing to experience?
Yes.
But anyway, I went and you didn't know that you just did what you were told and that's it. But I grew to love the martyr when I saw the sisters, the devotion they had to the patients and the love that the patients had for them.
Well, you said that you did what you were asked to do, and so you trained as a teacher, but you came to Australia. Did you plan to come to Australia? Was that ever part of this?
I chose that, yes. I chose to come to Australia.
Okay.
I wanted to give my life to God. And and then I found this place in County Cork that was training Irish girls to come to Australia. So I was there for a few years, and we studied all the... Australian history, in those days, they were, got the history of the establishment of each state. And we were very interested in that, and we learned a lot. The sisters that taught us there had been in Australia, and they loved Australia. So they sort of passed on to us a love for Australia before we ever came here. But one thing frightened us is to say, when you go out to the bush, that frightened us, we thought, the bush. Do they live in the bush in Australia? We didn't understand what the bush was.
I'm interested in a young woman making a decision to serve God, to serve Christ, to serve the church, to go to the other side of the world. And then, for, of all things, you find yourself on a troop ship, as you've mentioned. So here are 10 of you, young nuns on the way to Australia with all of these returning soldiers. They've been away for a long time. And then you arrive back in Brisbane in a, you know, a robust kind of society. In all of that, you managed to hold your life, your life in service to Christ.
I did, yeah.
How do you do that? How would you speak to a young nun about that today? Or
I suppose, how would I do it? It was an instinct with me, because I thought I can help people. I grew up in a loving family, and in a big family, and a loving, very loving, wonderful father and mother. But we lived with a small farm. And my mother was very kind to neighbors who were sick. And I thought I could do that, but I didn't want to, you know, there were big convents around me, you know, in about 18 miles away and about 10 miles away from where I lived. Mm-hmm. But actually, because at the time there were three ahead of me, and they were able to get secondary school education, and because I didn't have a secondary school education, those convents wouldn't accept me. So I had to look elsewhere.
Yeah.
So that's how I managed. I came to Australia, and it's been just by the grace of God, and I've always believed that, you know, that I was meant to come. But it was when I realized what I was doing. I realized when I was coming up, we you know, got off the boat in Sydney, and then we got on this train for Brisbane. I thought, what have I done? You know, what am I doing? What do I think I can give? I've nothing to give. Well, I know nothing, and it was a desperate feeling. It was absolutely terrible. But anyway, I kept on, and we were made welcome, and we worked very hard. We didn't have time to be sorry for ourselves, really. And I think if you, you know, I think if you concentrate on others, what you can do for others, I think that's how you will get over fear and uncertainty.
Yes, I'm pressing in on this because we're in an age now where it's difficult to get people to serve in many fields of life, whether it be whether it's, you know, volunteering for the local scout troop, or whether it's and taking religious orders is that much harder again.
It is.
You think about what did you have to give. And with your limited educational background, by the way, to now have an honorary doctorate is amazing. And it just shows how much God has used you. But what was it that you did have to give?
I what did I have to give? I had to give a willingness, you know, and I had great trust in God that he would never leave me. And it's hard to describe it because it was desperately lonely. I looked out on the you stand on the balcony of the old Mater Private Hospital in Brisbane, and in those days there were lovely small timber homes around the place, South Brisbane, and I used to picture them there with families sitting around as I thought around the fire. I thought not one person in Brisbane knows I live, that I exist, and it tests your faith. But if you concentrate on what you can do for others. That's the only answer, Stephen, I can give you. If you think of others, you can forget yourself. Now, I spent many years eventually in the operating theatres, and I thought I would die of fright going there, but I didn't, because when you go there, you realize there's an unconscious patient there on the bed. It's my duty to do everything I possibly can to help the surgeon, help everybody, be a team, and get that woman back to bed conscious and better. So I think that's all I can say. That's all.
How would you speak to a young person who was thinking about entering into that sort of lifestyle, or indeed serving in any field, knowing now what you know?
I think that religious life isn't so attractive, you know, to be nuns, sisters.
Yes.
It's not very attractive to people now, because today, as was different in our day, a lot of people can do all these things without ever becoming a religious, and they see that. They can have a life, you know, a life, they can get married, or they can be single, whatever it is, and they can go on the missions, and they can help the poor around them. Mm. And I think that's the difference. But in my day, it was deemed that only the religious people could do all that, knew how to do it, whereas we were struggling ourselves. We were learning as we went along. You know, that's
do you feel you missed out in some ways?
Oh no, no! I have. When I came to Australia, my sister came 2 years later, and we both made up our minds after a few years. We were going to love Australia. We would love Australia. We wouldn't love Ireland the less, but Australia was our home, and Australia we would love, and we would do everything we possibly could to make ourselves useful. And, you know, any love we gave was returned to us 100-fold. Now, I tell you, my sister died about 2 years ago, I didn't have any family here, immediate family. And somebody said to me, "You must be very lonely because you have no family here." And I said, no, that's not the case at all, because any love I gave to Australia has come back 100-fold, and I feel surrounded by love. And that's been the case. Australians have been, well, I am Australian, you know.
And you've made a magnificent contribution to this country, especially through your administration of the Mater Hospital for Mater Hospitals for 22 years.
Yeah.
I suppose I should ask you, really, how do you see healthcare changing in the future? And in a world where sometimes people look at the contribution made by Christian organizations in healthcare and other social services, could you ever imagine a time when Christians were not involved?
No, I can't. I can't imagine a time when they were not involved. But they're a very good Christian association of all denominations, you know, and they are doing extraordinary work, and they are so important, you know, to the healthcare and welfare of people in Queensland. I talk about the Mater. I've watched healthcare and its development, and the Mater has developed now to be it's a wonderful place. And I tell them it's a much more wonderful place than it ever was when the sisters were, you know, there in force.
Mm.
Because when we worked there, we were very diffident about saying anything about why we were doing it, because we didn't want to seem to be trying to convert people. You know, that sort of we just worked.
Hmm.
And whereas now, you know, the people that work at the Mater can talk about the values that move them, you know, compassion, dignity, respect for the dignity of the patient, care and professionalism and all these things. And every one of them, regardless of race or faith or lack of faith, you know, they can all say, these are the values that I want, that I like to live by myself, you know? And there they are, and it's a wonderful place. The atmosphere is marvelous in the Mater. You know, the people, somebody said to me a couple of months ago, you know, the one thing that's remarkable about the Mater is that the staff like one another. I thought it was very insightful.
Well, imagine being in a country where we were not able to speak freely about why we were doing what we do as Christians.
Oh yes, that's terrifying. I mean that's difficult. I mean, I know it does happen, and where they're persecuted for it. But the all the different churches are all doing great things, and they're just when an opportunity. And I believe too, Stephen, you know, I have found out that there are so many people that want to do good, but they don't quite know where to put their effort or their money. And when they're given an opportunity, they do it. When they see a need, a specific need that they can contribute to, either physically or in any way, they're there, they're ready. So there's goodness. There's wonderful goodness in people if they know how to use it.
Which brings us back to a young girl who stepped forward in the 1940s and came to Australia and just said, "Just use me."
Yeah, that's what. And knowing nothing, I felt I knew nothing, and that what could I contribute, and that was it. But I trusted in God, And I've always felt, Stephen, now after I'm 91 years of age, and I've been,
oh my word,
I'm 70 years, and I can just say that God has been with me every part of every step of the way. And I did ask him one time to take me out of the matter, because I said my nerves wouldn't stand it, you know, seeing sick people and dying people and making mistakes and all that. But he never listened. He didn't take any notice of me. And, you know, he probably meant me to stay there. But, you know, so I have never lost contact with the matter. I still wander over there. I'm like a piece of furniture or something.
I'm sure you're much more than that. You're an inspiration. And I want to thank you for what you've contributed to the Australian community. And I trust and pray that you will still remain rich and deep in your love of God for many years to come.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Well, thank you. It's been a delight speaking with you.
And God bless you.
Thank you.